So I have a short little video I'm going to show you. It's a 5-minute video, and it's a video that was sent to me this past week from Les Tilka, who is one of the missionaries we have supported here at church in the Philippines. And I was talking to Dave about it, and he said, you probably should give a little background because some people may not know who he is. I know some of you do, some of you don't. But Les grew up in Banner Elk, and his parents are still there. And he went to Liberty University years and years ago. And back about that time, Jerry Falwell was senior, was in charge of Liberty. And he had gone to the Philippines. And among other things that happened while he was there, he met a young lady named Sarah Lee, who for some reason he was so impressed with that he offered her a full scholarship to Liberty on the spot there. So she came over to Liberty. Les went to Liberty. Les saw Sarah. Love at first sight. They got married, and then they decided they would both go back to the Philippines and minister there and start a church. They started a church. The name of the church is Quest, and it's been going strong for, in the 20s, 25 years or so, something like that. So they've got a great ministry. A few years ago, Les's father was trying to round up some people to go over on a short-term mission trip over there, and I went with them, and it was a wonderful experience. So I got to meet Les and Sarah Lee over there and see their church, see the ministry that they were involved in. They have a prison ministry over there too, feeding of the poor, that kind of thing, and tremendous needs over there, and they were meeting the needs. Really appreciated getting to know them and enjoying them. So anyway, there's the background. So Les sent me this video this week, which I thought you might appreciate knowing since we as a church have been involved in helping them, and just to let you know the needs they're going through right now because of the coronavirus. Things are over there, believe it or not, a lot worse than they are here as far as the way the government, the restrictions and things like that, that the government's putting on the people. So I won't speak too much more. I'll let you just watch it and make a couple comments when it's over.
And greetings from the Philippines. I just wanted to send you this quick video to give you an update on our situation here in Cebu. In the Philippines, churches and public gatherings have been shut down since March 15th, and our whole country went into home quarantine or shelter in place since March 28th. Like everybody else, we've been working from home and trying to find creative ways to still minister in spite of the social distancing. We've been doing our best to stay connected with our church family, Quest Fellowship, as we produce online content in this makeshift studio here in our home. Fortunately, we've been given special consideration as an essential worker for the times that we need to deliver food to families in need. Well, like other parts of the world, things here in Cebu have gone from bad to worse. Our cases have continued to rise, the number of fatalities have increased, the healthcare system has been overwhelmed for months. Even the headlines today said that the cemeteries are so crowded that they're gonna have to find a way to open up other cemeteries. Well, while the curve has flattened in other areas of the Philippines, here in Cebu, the numbers have continued to rise to the point where Cebu has become the epicenter of COVID activity here in the Philippines and in some regards in Southeast Asia. 2 weeks ago, our president sent the military in to impose a strict shutdown, lockdown, whatever you want to call it, where we can only go out a few hours a week for buying essential goods. In fact, we have to take this huge quarantine pass with us so that we don't get arrested when we go through the military checkpoints. I can say that we probably need your prayers now more than we ever have. We love Cebu, and our heart just hurts when people that we love so much are hurting around us and seeing their loved ones sick and dying. So here are the things I'd like to ask you to pray for. Pray that we'll stay encouraged during this time. You know, being stuck at home for an extended period of time wears on you. Normally we could get away for a couple days at the beach. That's not an option right now. We've learned a lot during this time. We've learned to rely on God. I've learned the hard lesson because I'm a doer and I like to just always be on the go, and I haven't been able to do that. So I've learned to be still. And so there's good things that have come out of it, but pray that we'll stay encouraged as we encourage others. Pray for those that are affected in Cebu by COVID-19 and the virus. Sunday, we got word that one of our church members was transferred to a government quarantine facility. They've set up several to alleviate the crowding in the local hospitals. And today we got a phone call that one of our church members' husband passed away from COVID-19. I don't know how you feel, but for us, sometimes it just feels like we're living in the middle of some movie. So pray for those affected by COVID-19. And lastly, pray for all those that are affected financially. The system here in the Philippines for the majority of Filipinos is no work, no pay. And so the food relief that we've been able to distribute has really been a lifeline for these families that are in such desperate need. So thank you for your generosity as we continue to do that. Our church giving, of course, has decreased considerably over the last several months. Well, since the day that Sarah Lee and I arrived in the Philippines almost 27 years ago, we've trusted God to meet our needs and provide for us, and we know that He will continue to do so. A lot of you have been a part of that as you've stood beside us financially as supporters, and we're so, so grateful for that. Many of you, no doubt, are feeling the effects of this thing too in your life and your work and in your finances. And we want to ask that you would drop us an email or send us a message on Facebook, and please let us know how we can also be praying for you. If you're led to and able to give financially during this time to help offset the needs of the ministry, it would be greatly appreciated. We have 15 staff and their families that rely on us, that are our staff. So that, along with the things in outreach that we're still continuing to do. So you can give online at our website, questcares.org, or you can go to the address at the bottom of this newsletter and send in a check. But please let us know how we can be praying for you. We know that God is still in control. We know that God knows when and how this is going to end. And so thanks for this time to watch this video newsletter. Please stay in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks again, and God bless.
Okay. If anybody would like me to forward that, that was an email, forward that to them for that information, I'll be happy to. Just let me know, and I'll send it out to you. It's a great ministry, and they have some serious needs right now. So, yes, ma'am.
So she's using it as a chance to go once a week and get enough so that she has, you know, something to eat for the week. But they're not in school, haven't been since we have, their kids are getting nothing, because they don't have the computers or anything like that to do any kind of online study. So they're getting absolutely nothing, and she says the disease is rampant down there right now. She lost her nephew last week.
Coronavirus?
Coronavirus, 38 years old with a wife and son. And so things are just happening, you know, right and left. We think, you know, here, right here in Avery County, we are doing very, very well. And, you know, all this mountain area here. But it's crazy in some of these other countries.
Yeah. And if you didn't hear the first part of what Joanne said, she's talking about Malawi, that they're being ravaged there also. Really all over the world. But the countries that don't have a good infrastructure seem to be getting hit much harder. So there's a lot of places that if you have a desire to give to God's work, there's a lot of great places to give. And I'm sure, Joanne, if you're interested in donating to Malawi, Joanne can give you information about that too. So, but anyway, let's get into 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. You might remember, this book can neatly be divided into three parts: the past, the present, and the future. that Paul was talking to the Thessalonians, and when he was talking about the past, he talked about the persecution that they had already endured, and he said that basically three good things can come out of it, that you can be purified, and number two, you can your condition can be revealed to you so you know where your shortcomings are, and thirdly, it prepares you to help others. So we talked about that a couple weeks ago, and then last week we started into the present, where he's saying, let me tell you what you need to do right now. And we focused last week on sexual purity. It was kind of a rough subject to deal with, but that's what Paul was facing at the time, and he dealt with it. So we're still into the present. We have a few more verses, and then we'll get into the future, but which is the eschatology, if you want a nice fancy word, which just means a study of future events. But let's take a few minutes and wrap up the rest of the present issues, which start in verse 9, where he says this. Now about your love for one another, we do not need to write to you, for you yourselves have been taught by God to love each other. And in fact, you do love all of God's family throughout Macedonia. Yet we urge you, brothers and sisters, to do so more and more and to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. So he's getting into practical stuff now. He's already talked about the practical sexual purity issue. Now second thing he really comments on here, he says, lead a quiet life. Don't be somebody that is offensive to other people. We all know people like that. People who are just loud people, and they interject when they shouldn't, and they get in your business. And are you raising your hand, Bob, because you're one of them? Okay. I was going to say when I got done with this, yes, I was. What I was going to say is this is not aimed at anybody in particular. Okay. But we've all been around people like that. You're not like that, Bob. You're just opinionated, but slightly. Karen says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. I heard a story about Winston Churchill's got all these funny sayings that he's quips he's so quick to say to people, but he had a friend like that. I don't know if I should say friend. He had another member in Parliament that was one of these kind of people that was just always talking all the time and just was relentless in expressing his opinion. And he was in the middle of one of these, I don't know, tirades or whatever, talking to Winston Churchill. And kind of in the middle of it, he said, Winnie, have I ever told you about my grandchildren? And Winston had already heard enough, and he was trying to get out of the situation. And his reply was, no, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. So you don't want to be one of those kind of people that people are afraid to ask you a question. They don't want to ask you what time it is because they know you'll tell them how to make a watch. You know, so it's just a practical thing. Paul just says, hey, don't be offensive to people. And he goes on to say, oh, there was another verse, that Bible verse that relates to that, Ecclesiastes 5:3, which I think shows there's a little humor in the Bible. Many words mark the speech of a fool. There's another verse, too, that says something like, in the presence of many words, there is sin, or something to that effect. I can't remember where it was, but fools kind of just keep on babbling. So what does Paul say? Lead a quiet life. Then he goes on to say, you should mind your own business and work with your hands, just as we told you. He's reminding him of what he told him when he was there, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders and so that you will not be dependent on anybody. Mind your own business, work with your hands. If you do mind your own business, you tend to work with your hands. If you don't mind your own business, that means you're idle, you're not working with your hands. Paul says there's value in literally working with your hands. In our culture today, there's a lot of people who don't work with their hands, other than maybe typing on a keyboard. And there's a lot of people who are very affluent who don't really need to work. And it's just because of the blessings that God has given our society that we're prosperous, and a lot of people can make a living without getting their fingernails too dirty. But nonetheless, I think there is a need for us to work with our hands. Even if I didn't need to work, I think it would be good for me to work. It's just, you go all the way back to the Garden of Eden. Everything was pretty much perfect there. But what did God tell Adam in that perfect setting before he sinned? He put him in the garden. He says, go to work. Take care of this garden. Now, he didn't have to deal with thorns and things like that, but there was a lot of pruning and a lot of, transplanting or whatever he did in the garden. But it was God's desire that he worked, and we just need to know that work is good for you. How does that relate to us here at Walnut Grove? I think mainly in this way, to realize that retirement is not a biblical concept. We tend to look at that, you know, magic age of 65 when we can start drawing Social Security and Medicare and all those things and say, boy, that's when I'm going to take it easy and do what I want to do or whatever. That's not biblical. It's God's desire that we work with our hands from day one until we can't do it anymore. So it's just something to keep in mind. It's not to say that you shouldn't slow down in your level of the strenuousness that you might have in your job. That's different. Did I say that right? Yeah. Yeah, some people don't have a choice, Jim says. But anyway, so what's he saying? Be sexually pure, number one. Mind your own business. Work with your hands, number two, or number three. And number two would have been don't be offensive to people. So that's, in essence, what he's saying dealing with the present. So we got that out of the way. Now we can talk about what I've been wanting to talk about, which is we look to the future. We get down to verse 13, and we start talking about the future events that Paul is going to tell the Thessalonians that they have to look forward to. Why do we study prophecy in Scripture? A couple reasons. Number one, it's in Scripture. We go through the Scripture. Everything that comes up, we hit it. Number two, prophecy is one of the most prolific subjects in Scripture. There is a whole lot of stuff. About a third of the Bible relates to prophecy in some way, shape, or form. So if God didn't want us to study prophecy, he wouldn't have put so much of it in the Scriptures. That's number two. But thirdly, and this relates to us specifically, to our generation, we should study prophecy because I believe we are living in the end times. Now, 200 years ago, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, yep, people should have studied prophecy then. But we've got something they don't have. We have fulfillment of prophecies that are indicating that we are in the last days. And I don't know if you realize how many things have been happening to indicate that we are, in fact, in the last days. Let's go back 100 years. Let's just look at the last 100 years compared to the earlier 1900 years since Jesus was here. I wonder if you can think of something that has happened in the last 100 years that is a direct fulfillment of prophecy or a direct indication of end times. And I'm going to just give you an opportunity to shout some things out and just keep in mind that we're talking about the last 100 years, which is an incentive for us to pay attention to prophecy because we're in the end times. So does something come to mind? Karen's already got her little finger up. She's front of the class here. What comes to mind with you, honey? Israel becoming a nation. When did that happen? 1948. Remember the day? May 15th. I don't know why I remember that, but May 15th, 1948, Israel became a nation overnight, fulfilling a prophecy. And I wish I could remember the name of the prophet, but he said, this has never been done, that a nation has been born in a day. And that prophecy was fulfilled on May 15th, 1948. Israel became a nation. Why is that important? Because in the end times, the Jewish nation is mentioned. The temple is mentioned. Things like that, that 100 years ago, people would have had a hard time grasping that because there was no nation of Israel 100 years ago. It was called Palestine at the time. And the Jews were scattered all over the world. What happened in the early 1900s? The movement known as the Zionist movement took root, where supernaturally, it's the only way I can explain it, the Spirit of God entered into the Jewish people all over the world, and they slowly started migrating back to Israel around 1900. It was a fascinating event. It was not, there was no leader. Nobody called for it. It obtained the title of the Zionist movement, and it happened, and people started migrating back to Israel, which other prophecies were fulfilled by that. One of them was, think about it, all these Jews come from all over the world, all speaking different languages, and in order for them to communicate with each other, it had to be a common language. And the Hebrew language was basically dead, and one man and one family revived the Hebrew language in, I think it was 1910, something like that, and inspired all of these Jews to relearn the Hebrew language. And they invented new words for things like Coca-Cola and computers and things like that that were not in the old Jewish language. And now they have a revived language, which is, again, a fulfillment of a prophecy that the language would be revived. What else? Anybody else think of something? Alice? Okay. Alice is talking about Romans 1 and 2, where it specifically says that people will, their hearts will turn away from God, and he will give them over to their sensual desires and allow them to degrade their bodies, that men would do indecent things with men, and even women would abandon their natural relations and all sorts of horrible things. Yes, and we obviously see that happening right now. I think the moral condition of specifically America is probably the worst that's ever been. We might have had a time in our past when it was worse, but I don't know of it, and I study history. And all over the world, it's always been kind of bad in any country that hasn't had a Christian foundation. But our country did have a Christian foundation, so it's especially noticeable when we turn away from God. And I think that God is penalizing our country and the world for doing that, which it says in Romans chapter 1. They received in themselves the penalty for their perversions. Anybody else got anything that comes to mind? Val? That is interesting. I didn't even think about that until we started talking about it this morning, but I think that that very much could be a part of it. The backdrop I'll use of that is Jesus, when he was asked by his disciples, he said the temple is going to get torn down. And they asked him three questions. When is it going to happen? When is the temple going to be destroyed? What will be the signs of your second coming? And what will be the signs of the end times? And he answered all three of those questions. He kind of moved them around, and you have to diagram some of the sentences, but he did answer all three of those questions. And the question regarding the end times, he said there's three things to look for when you're looking at the end times. He said, first of all, there's always going to be wars and rumors of wars. He said, that is not the end times. So he said, don't let that be one of the preambles or the signals of the end times. But what he said that he will happen, that will be the beginning of the end times, he said there's going to be nation will rise up against nation. You say, well, wait a minute. You just said wars are commonplace. Nations versus nations. In other words, all the nations of the world are going to be in two different camps, and there's going to be a world war. That's what he's saying. The little skirmishes between this country and that country, he said, you're always going to have that. He said, but when the end times get cranked up, when they get started, you're going to see every nation of the world lining up against every other nation of the world, and there's going to be world wars, essentially. And what did we have in 1919 or 1917? World War I, which really World War II was really just a follow-up of World War I. Basically, the same people fighting against each other. It just wasn't quite settled at the end of World War I, so they picked it up again in World War II. So what does that tell me? That tells me that it's a fulfillment of a prophecy that Jesus himself said, when you see the nations at war with each other, start looking up, start paying attention, because that is the beginning of the events that's going to signal the end times. What else did he say was going to signal the beginning of the end times? Earthquakes, natural disasters, and famines. And what have we seen? I don't know if you've paid attention, or you do pay attention to something like earthquakes, but there are, you can find all this information out on the internet. The amount, the increase in earthquake activity from the year 1900 until now is almost a 45-degree angle. Every year, it gets up higher and higher. It's no longer how many days before the next earthquake. Now it is how many earthquakes in each day. Across the world, there are, I think, somewhere between 20 and 30 earthquakes every single day around the world. Different levels of tremors and things like that. We only hear about the big ones, but they're happening all over the place. Famines is the other thing Jesus said to watch out for. Have you noticed in the news recently that there is now a big blight of these locusts? Have you heard about that? It's of biblical proportions. They're just wiping out in Africa, going across into Asia. I think they said they're going to work their way into South America somehow or another with the wind patterns and things like that. But you're seeing these things that 100 years ago you didn't hear about these earthquakes. You didn't hear about these worldwide famines that will be caused by these pestilence and stuff and the wars, the world wars. So these are just the beginning. That's a takeoff of what Val said about the coronavirus. That's another thing that we don't really know how bad this thing's going to be yet, do we? I mean, you hear different stories. Sometimes it seems like they're making a bigger deal out of it than it is. But then you hear stories of what Les just said and how devastating it is to, you know, underdeveloped countries and what Joanne was talking about over in Africa. So
go into some highly sensitive areas. And we went into, I think it was Mount Vernon, Illinois, on the Ohio River. And I won't get into naming who they are or whatever, because somebody might want to go attack them. But anyhow, they made biological warfare, mustard gas, anything you could think of. So in my mind, the COVID is probably a biological warfare. That's my mm-hmm. story, and I'm sticking to it.
The U.S. government contract building, it wasn't run by the U.S. government. It was run by a foreign country. And we had the clearance to go in there.
Saudi Arabia.
And it was run by Saudi Arabia, and they were making biological warfare. They wouldn't let Val in. I was the only one allowed in. I wasn't allowed in the building.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing's been going on for a long time. The other thing comes to mind, brother, is that we're living in the last of the church age. So what we know, one of the things that we see happening in the American gospel is a lukewarm church, the Church of Laodicea. And that's going to be the greatest sign the church is going to have, that we're going to be able to gather, but there's not going to be any power in our gathering.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Bible says. He said, I'd rather have hot or cold, because when you're lukewarm, you're no good for nothing. And I think that's where we're at today. There's no doubt in my mind that the church has, in most cases, become powerless.
So. Okay, anybody else think of anything that the last 100 years is fulfilling prophecy or pointing to the end times? Anything else coming to mind? Vern? Who couldn't hear, cashless society, something that is strongly indicated by the mark of the beast. You cannot buy or sell without this mark. That is something that is going to happen. So in order for that to happen, that has to build up. There has to be a preparation for that. We're seeing the preparation for that right now. Have you noticed just in the last, I only started noticing it 3 or 4 weeks ago. Maybe it's been longer than that. But everybody's running out of coins now. The banks, I read this morning where banks are paying extra money for coins because the coins are going out. Well, what is that an indication of? It's an indication that we're working our way towards a cashless society. If you don't have cash, it's cashless. A lot of places now, it's either pay exact change or use your debit or credit card. So we're heading that way. The mark of the beast, which is indicated in Revelation. By the way, I'll jump off on that real quick. One of the things that, you know, it says that you'll receive the mark on your right hand or on your forehead, which now we know in the last 100 years, we know that there is actually an ability to implant a chip in your hand, anywhere on your body, certainly on your forehead, things like that, and where a cashier can merely scan your hand. And it's very doable right now. But yet, if we were sitting here 75 years ago, so and I said that, somebody said, you're crazy. There's no way you can do that. Back then, they thought maybe the mark of the beast would be something that would be tattooed on you. But now we understand it's just an implant of a chip. And believe me, the technology is there. A lot of you who already have pets who have chips implanted in them, and if they get lost, somebody finds them, they can take them to a vet, and they can scan the chip and say, this cute little dog belongs to Nancy Ball, and call her up and say, come get your dog. And other chips, you can actually track them. So that's a very doable thing right now in our generation. And how is this going to make the jump from animals into people? It's very simple. All it takes is one high-profile kidnapping with a devastating end, and somebody to say, if that little girl had a chip implanted in her, we could have found out where she was in time and saved her life. And then parents who are concerned about their children being kidnapped are going to say, well, I'll just put a chip in my child, and then I can find her if she does get kidnapped. And from a human perspective, it makes sense. I mean, if it wasn't for a biblical prohibition against receiving the mark of the beast, I'd get my children implanted with a chip. Anything for safety. But it's going. That's how it's going to get into the human body, is what I'm saying. And then from there, once it's voluntarily put in, it's going to become mandatory, and then it's going to be the way that you're controlled, because you won't be able to buy or sell. And we know one other thing is the mark of the beast. We know the number of his name is 666. I've talked before about UPC codes. Some of you may not have been here, but every UPC code that you look at, if you know how to read the numbers are underneath the line, so it's easy to figure out which of those skinny lines represent which numbers. And if you look, you'll see that every UPC code starts out with the number 6. The number in the middle is 6. It's the three sets of lines that are longer than all of the other UPC lines, UPC codes. Why is that important? It's just ironic of all the numbers to pick for a UPC code to know when to start, when to stop, and when the middle is, that they pick the number 666. What am I saying? I'm saying we are living in the last days. This is why we should be studying Revelation, because of all these things. Let's see if there's anything else I had written down. It says in the last days there's going to be two prophets. They're going to be evangelists. And it says that they're going to be killed, and their bodies are going to lie in the street for, I think, 4 days. But it says something interesting about that. It says everybody in the world will be able to see their bodies lying in the streets. Now, if I had preached this sermon 100 years ago and everybody in the world would be able to see it, in people's minds, they would think, well, somebody's going to take a picture, and they're going to pass this picture all over the world, and everybody's going to be able to see it. Not anymore. Live television program. The TV cameras are going to be there. They're going to beam the pictures of these people, these two prophets who have been killed lying in the street. They're going to be resurrected, too, by the way. But their images are going to be beamed all over the world. Now we can see that. Why? Because we're living in the last days. All sorts of things like that, that if you stop and think about it, are unique to us. What about in Revelation, It says there's going to be a star that's going to fall to earth, and it's going to poison a third of the waters. Remember that portion of Revelation? And it says the name of the star is Wormwood. And now we know in our generation that Wormwood, there is a German word, a Russian word for Wormwood, and that word is Chernobyl. And we also know that Chernobyl is where they had the nuclear reactor core failed and caused a lot of damage and still has not been totally, it's just poured concrete around. It's all they've done to try to keep it contained.